So what was the inspiration for Gut? How did this idea come about?
Well, simply put, as possible. You know, I hadn't made my own, I hadn't made a feature-length narrative film yet. I put together an anthology horror film, which is feature-length, and I had directed some of it. You know, but it was a shared directorial thing. There were like 9 directors. It's called Lovecraft movie, and it was kind of a bit of a hodgepodge. So a lot of it wasn't pre-planned. It was sort of mixed and matched, you know, to try to get the best result in the end. And so this was going to be the, you know, I wanted to finally get over the hump, you know, the hurdle of getting a, you know, a feature-length film made, that I'd be the only director on it. And it was, that's one of the things. It's just like, it's the monkey on your back, or the, whatever. You really want to prove that you can do something like that, but it's very hard, as many people know. So the inspiration was somewhat, you know, desire to prove that I could do that for myself, you know. But in terms of, I think you're probably asking me more about the inspiration for that particular story.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In that case, it's funny. I was just talking about this with someone else, actually. And basically, it's, I wanted to come up with something that would be, that would have commercial potential, that maybe would have, let's say, more commercial potential as crass as that sounds, than things that I've done before. That would be, you know, accessible to a mainstream audience. I know you're probably laughing when you haven't seen the film. When I say that, it may not be as applicable as you actually see the film. But that was kind of part of the inspiration. This is the idea. I've got to try to break into this industry with a strong feature film made on a low budget. So there are a lot of, inspiration came in many forms. The inspiration was we couldn't work too far outside of the means. Like, worst case, we would need to be able to get this film made, on a pretty low budget. You know, if we couldn't get a decent budget together for it, we would still need to be able to have a fallback plan where it could be made without compromising the integrity of the film, the story, too much, but on a low budget. And that's a hard sell. So you had to write something essentially that was a very simple premise, with a minimal number of characters, a minimal number of locations and settings, and that would still be interesting, you know, and would still keep you hopefully on the edge of your seat. And basically, that's, it's like writing within constraints, and that's not an easy thing to ever do. And I think the first thing really was thinking, well, we've got to come up with a good story. Let's just come up with a very basic idea. And I had taken a little inspiration, now this is not for story specifically that I took the inspiration from, but I was impressed, let's say, by the success of the Saw franchise. You know, I was really blown away by how successful they were and how they just kind of, they created a niche for themselves, more than a niche, man, they created a whole, like, yeah.
A whole franchise.
Really, yeah. Well, I mean, they built an audience out of one film that just seemed to expand and expand, and I was just very impressed by that. I was hoping, you know, I was wanting to sort of do something similar in terms of create, you know, a potential franchise, something that would be maybe 2 or 3 films, you know, and then get, like, we'll try to get the first one made, and then hopefully the interest would spawn the others that I would have plans for. And I had it all thought out. I knew kind of what the storylines were going to be. I didn't have the script written for the second 2, let's say, but I kind of knew what they were going to be about or what directions I was going to take them in. I had outlines in my head and some brief outlines written down as well. And then I wrote the script. And also, to be fair, the story was a joint effort. My wife, Anna, and I came up with the story together. We would talk about it back and forth. And then I took it, you know, we came up with, and I fleshed that into the script in its various drafts. But it wasn't... So it was a somewhat calculating process,
mm-hmm.
in a sense, that isn't exactly steeped in the sort of, you know, the kind of creativity and inspiration that, you know, you might hear about sometimes. But what's weird is that it did ultimately, you know, where things began and where it ended up is very interesting to me, because as I wrote it, and then I would give people drafts, it sort of became clear to me that this is not quite as mainstream, nor maybe as begging for sequels as I had originally planned or thought. And I accepted that, but I kind of, you know, I kicked myself and go, you set out to do one thing and you end up making something else, you know, in a sense, but you know that what it is, what you wrote and, you know, when you're shooting it, what you're doing, what you're making, it's the right thing for you to do. It's the right thing for you to be making that you feel strongly about, that it's, you know, it's compelling you. And I really just injected a lot of personal stuff into it. In terms of direct inspiration or you know, people that have inspired me in general, I'm a huge David Cronenberg fan, so I have no doubt that, mm-hmm. People already have said that they've seen some, like, or, you know, they said it in a nice way. No one said I ripped him off yet, which is great. And I don't think I have. And I certainly would never want to. But I definitely heard a lot of references to that. And they're true. They're fairly stated, because I'm a huge fan of his. Probably he's the biggest in terms of filmmakers and their work. Probably the biggest source of inspiration for me personally. Any single source. And then outside of that, there are just many other filmmakers I really love, like K-Duck Kim, the Korean filmmaker, and Michael Haneke. David Lynch, and there are a lot. I was going to say there's Shunya Tsukamoto, the Japanese filmmaker. There are many directors that probably definitely the biggest single source of inspiration in terms of his body of work, his career, the way it's evolved so beautifully. It's just become, it's such an interesting career to look at over the span of its, you know, many years. It's really impressive, and so that's part of it. And in terms of the content, the direct content, which is very much, honestly, it's very, very personal. A lot of it's really just taken right out of my life. I know how that might sound.
Yeah. Film,
it's not quite that psychopathic or nuts. But in terms of the norms, in terms of the general lives that these guys have, the two main characters, Tom and Dennis, it's really just different shades of me, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. That's really what it is. Myself at different points in my life are basically those two different characters. So when I read it, when I see it, you know, watch it, which I've done now way too many times, to me, that's what it is. I mean, I realize it's two versions of me talking to each other. And I hope that people feel that they're separate enough. I think they are. They're very different. I mean, they are very different, because I'm very different now than I was, let's say, when I was in my early 20s. I'm 36 now. So it's, you know, Dan is like the 20-something-year-old, doesn't want to grow up, stuck in the past, friend. And, you know, his friend Tom was more reflective of where I am now or where I'm heading, you know, my life now. When I wrote the script, I didn't have a child, but I do have a child now who's 14 months old, and she's awesome. And I am married. I've been married for almost 10 years. So there's a lot of it that is very much right in my personal life. There's a fight scene. There's an argument that takes place between Tom and Dan early on in the film where where he shows up at his house, and he's like basically bugging him. Dan shows up at Tom's house, and he's bugging him and saying, you know, where were you? You didn't come to work. You know, he's asking questions that a friend would probably understandably ask, but the way he's asking them, the tone, the way he just shows up, yeah, it's awkward, it's uncomfortable, but that happens. That scene, to some extent, I mean, not verbatim, I did rewrite a bit for the context of the story, but that happened. That was me at one point in one of those roles, et cetera. So there's a lot of real stuff in there. There are direct winks and nods and stuff, and, whereas, of course, quote-unquote, you know, all of the characters are fictitious, and all of the events portrayed herein are fictitious, no coincidences to living or dead or intended. That's, of course, yes. Yeah, that's true. I think we even have that in the credits. But in terms of inspiration for those characters, comes from me and and Chad, actually, those two main guys. It's a lot of that's me and Chad, or me and me, depending on how I'm on the scene. But, yeah.
Just to clarify for the people that are listening and don't know, Chad is the person that ended up did the score, right?
Yeah. Chad has been, like, he and I have been friends, like I said, a long time, oldest friend I have. He's been doing, scores, musical work for, shorts and various things I did. I've been doing videos for his band. We've been basically collaborating in some form or another since we were teenagers. I mean, even walking around, on the streets of Virginia Beach with a video camera, just improvising for 25 minutes, things like that. I mean, we started out, very young, doing these kinds of things, and I'm very happy that we're still such good friends and that he was able to, do such an amazing job, because it really makes the film, it adds something to the film that just wasn't there before. It underscores it in a way, at least for me, that takes many of the scenes, such as where there are, and there's no dialogue, because as there are quite a few scenes where there's not too much dialogue. It just adds that additional layer, at least for me, that really helps push it through. So, yeah, Chad's my oldest and best friend. He scored good. With a guitar in the middle of the worst, a heat wave. It was the hottest week on record in New York City, I think, I swear. He told me that he was sitting there strumming the guitar, picking away at stuff, trying to find the sort of rhythms of the characters. I mean, he was basically, the way he scored this was as if he was reenacting, the performances of those characters in real time, musically. And I just, that you had me at that. There.
Yeah.
I can totally connect with that. I totally relate. That's a great idea. And the fact that he suffered in an apartment with no air conditioning because he had just moved in, and was recording it in a studio that he had built for himself in this new apartment, no air conditioning, worst heat wave on record. To me, turning out as well as it did, that just makes it that much more of an achievement that he did that. I'm really happy with it. Most people have been very happy about the score. Most of the criticisms or most of the comments about the score have been great, so I couldn't be much happier about it.
Okay, you mentioned earlier that the film was shot on a shoestring budget. Can you just tell us how much the film cost to make?
Sure. It's going to be a little bit of as the budget is still growing because we're still spending money on it. With film festival submission fees and prints, not 35mm prints. When I say prints, I mean video, video masters and stuff. There's a lot of costs once you finish a film. Boy, there's a lot of costs, and either you build that into your budget or you borrow or beg, steal or scrape that shit together, because you can't cheap out once the film is done. You can and you shouldn't, because that makes all the difference in the world. The money and effort you put in after it's completed. But the budget, the production budget, and everyone works for deferred payment. If you're not familiar with that means in industry terms, quote unquote, you'll probably never see the money. But really what it actually means, and that's true, it probably means you won't see the money, because the movie basically has to, in order to for people to see their payments, all the people involved, it really has to make back the cost of the film, then make back all the marketing and promotional costs, which often can be equal to the budget on a studio film, and it's very, very usually the case with an independent film, equal to the budget or more. Depends, with all that in mind, the actual out-of-pocket cash production budget that it ended up being was probably about $35,000.
Wow.
So it may be growing a little now in recent months, that's because people are very kind, and I wanna clarify. I know you're not asking this question specifically, but this is something that's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Often there's a lot of marketing and promotion used with regard to the cost of the film in terms of, the achievement and how amazing or great it is that this person got to Cannes or wherever, let's say, that they're a shoestring budget film. And sometimes I think it gets spun a bit and twisted, and this is no negative reflection of anyone who makes film at all, because I think anyone who can do it, get it done, you know, more power to them, and I respect all filmmakers, you know, because it's hard to do. I respect all creative people. Any creating anything is difficult. But I will say that when it's said sometimes that this movie only cost, you know, we only spent $500, which was made for $2,000, you know. And then you watch and you go, wow, it looks pretty awesome. I wonder how they did that. And some people might think that. But the thing is, you know, I think a lot of time people aren't accurately counting the costs, you know. And that's why I made a point to say about being deferred. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I don't have the exact figures for you what this would have cost if we had actually paid everyone up front the rates that we offered deferred. Or even lower rates than what we were offering if they were cash up front. But I'll tell you one thing, it would not only have doubled the budget, it would probably have many times multiplied it. And I just think it's important for people to realize that as awesome as, you know, these stories are where a guy makes a movie for very little, you know, and then he has, you know, or a woman, and they have a huge success with it, and like, you know, your El Mariachis, your Paranormal Activities, your whatever. There is, just because you only spent X amount in your production budget, you know, doesn't, you know what I mean? It doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily reflect really all the sacrifice that went into that, or really realistically what that actually would have cost, such as is the case here. Because we got a lot of favors. You know, everybody working for us for deferred payment was doing us a favor, was generous and kind, and was helping us get this film made for essentially nothing, because they were getting fed, and, you know, there was some transportation covered, but just because it's a low budget doesn't necessarily mean the numbers don't always tell the truth. That's all I'm going to say. A movie that's made for a few thousand doesn't necessarily mean it's only a few thousand. A movie that's made for a few million, yeah, I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that aren't being told. Like when they say, for example, Hollywood film, $80 million. Well, when you look on IMDb at the estimated budget for those films, they're not including the marketing budget, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The marketing budget is often 50%, and actually it's often equal to, it could even exceed the budget of the entire film. So, you know, the truth behind advertising, isn't there a book called this, The Truth Behind Something in Advertising or whatever? I think there is that don't believe everything you hear, because it's a lot of it's spin, and a lot of it's to make something seem more appealing, like more of an achievement. And it's not to suggest that these films aren't an achievement, low-budget films. Like what Gareth Edwards did with Monsters is a definite achievement. It's a great achievement. I'm really happy for that guy that he's done so well. You know, it's just, you know, a lot of people, yeah. I don't think actually that Gareth Edwards, by the way, is someone who didn't count his costs accurately. I would never say that. Actually, from what I read about the estimated budgets, and I have a feeling, you know, I'm going off on a tangent. I'll just say, you know, I'll just leave it at that it's just something to keep in mind, that there are a lot of costs that don't get put in the initial numbers. People ask, what's your budget? It's almost never just that. I realize that I harped on that for a while.
No, it's okay. It's all right.
I apologize to everybody who was bored out of their mind to hear about this sort of obsessive ranting about budgets. It's just that, man, when you talk about your backyard zombie movie costing only, like, you know, 1,000 pounds or something, you got into Cannes, and I'm not naming names. I don't even remember the name of the film. I haven't seen it. I'm like, motherfucker, that shit. There's no fucking way it was accurately that budget.
Yeah.
There's no way you're counting right, man. Someone's counting. Someone is stacking. Someone is, you know, manipulating. This is press. This mm-hmm. is how you sell a film. This is how you make a film look good. It gets in the can and only costs 500 pounds or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds amazing. That gets people's attention.
Me,
my $35,000 movie, people are like, oh, wait, that's a, I don't have $35,000. I don't like this spirit of movie. I didn't have it at the time much either, to be honest. But, you know, it's, that's not what I was, what I've heard. Like, I just almost sometimes imagine people saying, like, but I've heard people make these features for, like, you know, $2,000 or, you know, shoestring, real shoestrings. And the thing is, it's never, yeah, it's just, ah, man, can you tell it bugs me?
It's no big deal. It's okay.
No, I know. That's cool. It's on the record, man. I'm not going to withhold. I've been feeling about that for a while.
That's okay.
You know, and I'm sure I'll be the hypocrite that spins my fucking movie in the same fucking way. And the chicks squall, they're like, yeah, man, it only cost $35,000. It's an amazing achievement. Look what we did. No, I won't be saying that. I'll be letting other people say that, hopefully, if I'm lucky, on our behalf.
So considering the fact that you have, you know, what you said, these deferred payments and whatnot, what was the casting process like? And let's be totally honest here. I mean, Jason Vale and Nicholas Wilder are really solid in this movie. I mean, how did you essentially get them to work for food? How did that happen?
That's one of the benefits, I would say, for an independent filmmaker. You know, it's one of the benefits of living in a city like New York. Or probably LA as well. I mean, probably even more so LA with the larger population, I believe. Oh, wait, is it a larger population? Or more actors, which is sad. I don't actually know the population numbers of LA versus New York. But, the process, I mean, we were lucky. But I was also willing, I think I would have kept looking if we didn't find people that we really liked. So the casting took a few months. It wasn't like, it didn't happen overnight. Basically it was an open call. I didn't cast friends. I didn't cast any friends. I mean, I became friends with all the cast, which was great. And it's great still. But, we had open casting call, posted on a variety of websites, industry websites and stuff. And, I actually had met Jason before. He had auditioned for something else I was working on, it was a year or two before that. So I actually knew him. I knew his name, and I remembered him well, and I remember thinking, I like this guy. You know, he's got serious chops. And, it's funny how that can work out. And, you know, it's funny how a positive impression that a person makes on you, even if, you just think, oh, I like this guy. He seems like he'd be great to work with. That can matter as much as a good read in an audition. And I'll tell you, it did. Like, his read was good, and Nick's read was good too. But when I thought of who I was going to cast for the title role, you're going to be with that person. We shot for about 27 days. You're going to be in bed with that person, so to speak. And you got to be able to work with them. You got to be able to get along with them, especially working on a deferred payment. You got to be confident that nothing is going to go wrong. That they're going to stick with you to the end. That they're going to be just as convicted. And those guys, we found that. I mean, really, in all our cast, everyone was. We were very lucky because everyone was very, very, down for the whole deal. That everyone was fully committed and. I was really happy because the chemistry that they had together, I felt really worked. At one point, I was considering being in the film myself. I had, no stretch. I mean, I was writing roles that were like loosely based off parts of my own personality. And I like to act as well. Doing that, actually, I've been pursuing that on and off for a long time, even longer than directing, actually. And it, the director's kind of taken over though lately, which is cool.
Naturally.
I even read opposite him, and Nick, there was something that Nicholas Wilder, who played Dan, had, there was something that he had, and I, at one point, it just sort of really dawned on me, you can't not cast this guy. You know, that was like an instance, I just realized, you'll regret it. He has serious talent, and a vulnerability, and a strange kind of affective, there's all this stuff that he can offer you, that he can give this film without doing anything. And it was a similar process with Jason. I decided to cast him. I was looking at pictures, just various headshots after he'd already done the first read and everything like that. And, I hadn't made a decision yet. There's another guy I was thinking about as well who really read well. And even Nicholas had actually read for both roles. So there was some pretty good people contending, and I looked at these pictures, and I just knew when I looked at it, I'm like, I could see that. I could see him as that guy. It really resonated for me in a way. It's funny how you never know what will click for you. And you know, good reads, of course, contributes a lot to that. But you never know what he'll do it. And then when I had him, we had callbacks. We did our second reads. And I had Jason read with all the bands, you know, the guys, particularly his best friend, Dan, in the film. He ran with Nick and a few other guys. And, you know, I hadn't officially offered Jason the role, but during that process, he put so much into it. He worked so hard. He had so much emotion and just really committing. And I, you know, I felt comfortable. I felt confident. This guy is going to, you know, come through beautifully, and I'm gonna, and I'm just gonna offer the role now. So I offered it to him right then. He was really happy about it, which made me happy. And then I deliberated terribly over Nicholas, not because of him not being awesome. He was awesome. But because I really still wanted to be in the film, because I was feeling a great conflict of interest, because I really still wanted to do it, because I knew I had been waiting for a good opportunity, and I'd always known, you know, from acting that a lot of times, unless you have a serious agent, manager, you know, whatever, a lot of time you end up just reading for really not very good, you know, reading some really bad scripts, auditioning for parts of stuff that's just not going to get you anywhere. Or you'd be lucky if the film you get completed, finished, or seen by anyone, which has happened to me before, I think as an actor. I'm glad I made the decision I made. I'm glad I cast Nicholas, because, you know, I you know, yes, people have let me know that I made the right decision. So, yeah, the process, we, like I said, we were lucky in a way, in a lot of respects. And he, you know, you never know who's going to walk in your door. You know, I didn't have money for a casting agent. We didn't have a huge budget. You know, we didn't, you know, we weren't with a non-union. We were working a very low, as you know, 35. And at that time, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't 35. At that time, I was probably estimating something more like 20. It blew up. It went over, because that's another thing that dovetails into what I was saying before. Yeah, it's, you know, if you're honest about your costs, it can be very hard, even with a simple script, to really make something for, you know, a few grand only. I mean, you practically have to be shooting that in one room in your backyard, because, you know, or in the woods, because having a, yeah, I mean, we didn't even have very many locations, but we paid. I mean, there were some, you know, there were some hefty fees for locations, and, you know, and one of our costs, you know, the food, the craft services, the catering, you know, things like that, it really adds up. And you want to do right by people. You don't want people eating pizza every day, you know, getting, like, rot and, you know, feeling sick and not wanting to come in the next day. You want to make sure that they're fed well, that they're, you know, a happy, it's a happy crew member, man. That's absolutely important, happy actor, you know. So, We lucked out. I mean, it could have taken months longer. I mean, we could have ended up having to dig into our pockets, hire a casting agent, and do it as, like, you know, a SAG, what's the level, is that the SAG ultra low or something. But that would have been, you know, at this point, that wasn't an option for us, because there are a lot of stipulations that come with the SAG contracts or films, and even the lowest of the low SAG contracts, the SAG ultra low or whatever. But, you know, there's plenty of stipulations to come with that. And, you know, I made a decision early on in the process that I wasn't going to do it, that we were going to go non-union completely this time, because I wanted to put as much of this on the screen as we could. I wanted to make this movie look as good, sound as good, just, you know, everything, performances, technical, just be as good as possible. And I knew that if we were, you know, going to the red and basically shelling out a lot of money to make it a bona fide union production, at least for SAG, it was going to kill us, unless we had a bigger source of funding than my own pocket, which we initially tried to get, and, you know, sometimes those things don't come through. Mm-hmm. I'm just glad we were able to get the film made on what we had. So, answer your question.
Yes.
It's long-winded again.
Yes, it does. It's okay. Yeah. How would you... pitch this movie to someone that's interested in horror that hasn't seen it or hasn't heard about it?
Man, that's hard. I could try to, I could give you my brief synopsis, but I don't think that's what I'm going to do. I'd say that this is a movie about everyday life and the monotony and tedium of everyday life, and the desire for anything, even something unhealthy, even something debatably morally wrong. And in this case, yes, it's morally wrong. It's not debatably wrong. It is morally wrong. What we're talking about in the film. But, but, you know, looking for some forms of thrill, it's about, and I think this is why a lot of people might get something out of film. I'm not saying everyone's going to like it. I know that's not going to happen. That doesn't happen with the best of films. It never happens. You always have your detractors, or you always have people that, you know what, different strokes for different folks. This doesn't always flow for everyone. But I will say that I feel like what we try to do, and what I wanted to do, and what I'm offering here is something that I hope a lot of people will relate to. We'll find a lot that can relate to here, but in both the main characters, in Tom and Dan, wherever they are in life, to relate to some of these feelings and emotions characters are having, and relate to the general kind of boredom of life that can often kind of cripple people and really kind of leave you depressed and frustrated and wanting more, some kind of excitement in your life, leave you to do something or lead you to pursue stuff, and or you become severely depressed and suicidal, which would be much worse, I guess. But depending upon how you look at this movie, you know, it's maybe not as simple as just doing what you feel is the right thing to do to alleviate your boredom. But it's about the extremes that you can reach when you're bored enough, when you're feeling like your life is stagnant enough, and when complacency is really set in. So it's about average everyday life under the effect of something very abhorrent and abnormal, and the sort of the meeting between those two things. The everyday meets, you know, the exceptional, what the fuck is this, can't look away, you know, gawking at the scene of a crime kind of feeling. The everyday meets that. And the question is how does that affect you? How does it change you to watch things or see things that aren't really right or that are very questionable or outright wrong? And if you get something out of that, or is there something wrong with you? Or are you just a human being like any person driving down the street, you know, see someone get hit by, you know, a car, she's an injured person, or someone getting beat up. And I think human beings in general, there's a lot of warriors to fascination. That's a very common thing. People don't maybe always like to talk about it or admit it, but, you know, it comes in all forms. And this movie, in a way, even, you know, it takes a lot from that idea. It was very much based around that. And what that does to you, and what that makes you, and then is it the right thing to do? Is it the wrong thing to do? And how much can that fuck up your life, you know, both on a psychological level, literal level, on a circumstantial level? How much can unhealthy, voyeuristic fascination, you know, looking for something strange and unusual or just different, how can that, you know, when can that guy get out of hand? And this movie is about that, and it's about disintegration of friendship of the two main characters, and how one character's need and desire to stay friends and to keep things the way they are, the character of Dan, the more adolescent character, you know, that is a, I don't know, I like to think a lot of people can relate to where these two characters have been at one point or another. Maybe not everyone, maybe not all women or men, but I tried to keep it as down earth as possible and basically, you know, make it about an unhealthy fascination with unhealthy things that can make you a party to something very dark and twisted. And this movie isn't about necessarily the shock value. It's not necessarily about the gore. A lot of this movie is very quiet and understated, purposely. Mm-hmm. It's the horror of the mundane, and I think I'm quoting someone that might have reviewed the film recently, I really like that statement. I think that that's what it is. It's the manifestation of the horror of the mundane as brought about by these videos that these guys watch and the way they sort of act as a catalyst and kind of turns their lives upside down and really, mutilate everything.
where is the film now, as far as where are you pitching it to? Where can we expect to see it? If people want to see it, or if people are interested in buying it, where can they go?
Well, we're in a weird place right now because the movie's been done for a little bit, not that long. And basically, we've been submitting it to film festivals, and we're waiting, you know, to get booked, hopefully, by some of those festivals we submitted to, and, and have some, you know, some premieres in various places. But look, we haven't officially released the film in any capacity yet, so it's kind of largely an unknown commodity at this point. It's a multi kind of stage process, you know, with releasing with film stuff. So basically, we are looking into distribution. We are looking into, and that being conventional, like on the DVD, Blu-ray, VOD, broadcast, even some limited form of theatrical or better if we can get it. Those are things we're looking into that are part of our plans, but, it hasn't solidified just yet. And of course, I'm hoping to have news to announce about things like that soon. But, so if you want to see it, I did find this, page. It's a pretty cool website, which a lot of people now have probably heard of, called Eventful, which you'll know from the demanded buttons, demanded, that you often see on, bands or film websites, various performer websites. And, one of the things that we're doing, if you go to gutmovie.com, you know, the site for this film, we have a demanded button, you know, and if you click on it, it takes you to eventful.com, where you, of course, you have to have an account, but, you know, it lets you use your Facebook account if you want, which is kind of practical. And basically, you can add it. You can demand it for whatever your city is, wherever you want. You can demand it for your school, your college, university. For that location, it'll come up. I'll see that data. I'll know. I won't maybe know who you are specifically, but I'll have that information, and I will have the ability to contact you through the site to let you know when the film is playing or available video on demand or on DVD or in some capacity available to you where you are or in some way. So that's one thing that people can do, and I'd encourage people to do that if they want to see the film, because this way I'll be able to make sure but as things occur, as opportunities arise, we are able to let people know. The other thing they can do is like our Facebook page, which is simple. It's just facebook.com/gutmovie. And if you go to gutmovie.com, there's a like button right for the page there, so you can use that. You can just go to facebook.com/gutmovie. If you like that page and you actually, you know, follow some of what goes on that page, that's another way to keep posted about things. And in addition to that, I'm on Twitter. It's just me. Right now I don't have a profile for the film, but I'm Zach Elias on Twitter. That's my handle, Zach Elias. Tried a bunch of other ones, but that's what I came up with. So hopefully it doesn't come off as too pretentious. Certainly not intended that way. So those are some of the ways you can follow me on Twitter, and then I'll also give you updates that way, of course, I'm saying. Those are some of the ways. We also have I have a website, GutMovie.com, where I blog, and all the blog posts about Gut are syndicated right through to the GutMovie.com website. So if you follow that blog, if you follow the GutMovie.com production blog, you'll also get updates. I believe you can subscribe, actually, to our mailing list there. But you know what? There are so many ways. I really think the demanded eventful thing is a really good way. The Facebook thing is a good way. I encourage people to do that if they're really into seeing a film. Another thing you can do, which you'll notice if you go to the Facebook page, is I actually posted on our wall for the film, you know, an offer to people at the moment. You know, it's not unlimited. It's not an indefinite offer necessarily, as contractual obligations may prevent me from doing this at some point in the future, depending upon what kind of distribution we get. But right now, you know, if someone wants to see the film, they like our fan page on Facebook, maybe tap us some love on eventful.com for the film. All they got to do is get in touch with me. They can get in touch through Facebook. I think you can actually now, using the fan page, you can message, you know, the page, and I'll get that message. Or you could just email me directly on the Gut website. But the key is you have to like the page. And also, you know, if you're inclined, if you're a member of Eventful, you don't have to join. If you happen to be a member of Eventful, we would certainly appreciate, you know, a demand on that side as well, if you happen to be a member. But if you do that, get in touch with me after. Like I said, you can do it either through, directly through the site or just probably message me directly to the Facebook page for the film. I'll send you a private link to the film, a non-public private link to the film. You can see it for free, and you can share it with your friends as long as you don't do so publicly, as long as you don't post the private link or the associated password anywhere publicly, because that would, of course, hurt us with distributors. That would,
absolutely,
that would be a problem for us. This is a private, this is what I'm doing and what I want to do, because I believe that you make a movie to get seen, and it, and ultimately that's the most important thing. And right now, where we're at, some good word of mouth, if people wanted to see the film and if they happen to like it and talk about it with their friends or, you know, share it with their friends, this is good for us, this is good for everyone. So someone gets a free movie, I get some free word of mouth, I think everyone's happy. So right now I see no downside to it. Like I said, the only way this can hurt, and you know, so if you're listening and you're out there to do any damage, yes, you could definitely damage me by posting the film publicly on a torrent site or you know, posting the link publicly if you happen to get the link to the private version of the film. But I don't think that's going to be a big problem. So that's, you know, that's the way you can see it right now. Or you can wait until like, it screens at a festival in your area, or comes out in a small indie theater, or hopefully better in your area, or there's VOD or DVD, etc., all those various options. But if you can't wait, I am perfectly happy to spread it behind the scenes, get it out there a little bit behind the scenes to help generate some word of mouth and take the pulse a little bit on people's reactions.